Hello, I'm Kerry Lonergan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. It's brought to you by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health.
Today's podcast was recorded just prior to the COVID-caused cancellation of this year's Royal Brisbane Show, the ECCA, as it's universally known. After some discussion, it was decided that despite the unfortunate shutdown of what is always one of Australia's biggest cattle shows, the discussions of exhibiting cattle with viewpoints from a very well-known exhibitor and the bloke who's been running the beef sector at the show for many, many years are still worth hearing. So an apology for any reference to the ECCA, but I'm sure you'll enjoy the imparted wisdom. Later on, Rob Cinnamon from Yugalbar Centre Stud in Northern New South Wales, but first Gary Noller, the RNA councillor in charge of beef at the Brisbane ECCA.
Gary Noller, chairman of RNA's beef cattle section. Welcome to the grill. Gary, how are you?
Very well, Kerry, and thank you for the opportunity.
Now, in charge of the beef cattle sector at the Royal National Show, it's still Australia's biggest beef cattle show?
I think, you know, we compete very well with Beef Australia. In terms of Royal, I think we have the most numbers, always have had.
I'm going to get to COVID in a moment, but this has been called the comeback show, given that you were not on last year because of COVID. Did you have a lot of problems with COVID getting this show on the road or getting this show actually starting and existing?
We've been dealing with Queensland Health, Kerry, since late last year. We all know what happened last year, and we were expecting that, I think about September last year, that we would have been well and truly into the roll out of vaccinations. We got a COVID-safe plan in place. We're working with Queensland Health the whole time, and we were full steam ahead. In May, we had a meeting, and a little bit further into June, suggested that, you know, we'd make the commitment. Now, that's quite substantial. It gets into the millions before we even set up and sawdust. We have 4,000 metres of sawdust come into bedding. We've got to elevate it up the levels these days in a new building. We crane dongers up to the top of the shed for accommodation. All of those costs, and it's not just in beef, it's right across the board. So we committed to that. We've talking with Jeanette Young in Queensland Health weekly, and her call still is keep going, don't stop. So we're full steam ahead. Last week, the declaration that came out and the closure of the border has made things a little more difficult. We had capacity numbers around about that 1,050 in entry. That's just in stud beef. When it came to what that meant across the border, I think we're down to just on 700 now, maybe a little shade under. Well, so things have changed, and weekly and certainly daily, it's been a challenge this year. And a lot of people still want to come. They certainly want to show. I think we got to a point just last year talking about entries. The bull sale seasons was the last year was so good that we were expecting by close of entries this year, at that stage, that we'd have record numbers. When Melbourne started to shut down and Victoria started to shut down, we were thinking about Beef Australia and what the numbers might be there, and would people rely on beef to be their outing as a show team and do their promotion there. So, you know, we started strategizing around about, I would say about March, and thinking of numbers, our entries might be, you know, as low as 500 or 600. Well, when our entries did come in June, we certainly were ecstatic. You know, they were well and truly up there. Mm.
Gary, it seems such a shame because producers have rarely had a 12 months like this past year, despite the fact that there was no show last year and sale yard prices have never been better. Producers have never had so many smiles on their collective faces. But there's still a lot of good vibes in cattle country despite COVID.
Oh, no doubt about that. You know, most people in the bush self-isolate more generally than the rest of the population. And it's just day-to-day chores as usual, mostly for rural people. So, and, you know, you're right. You know, there's a lot of confidence in the industry at the moment. Prices commercially are almost record, if not record. The ECCA, as we've talked about a couple of times, has hit new highs. And that confidence is passed on to the seed stock industry. And Now, there are plenty of commentators out there now saying that $1,500, $2,000 is probably a rise from last year, even on record highs, to this year's season coming up. So none of that will change. People still need to go on with their breeding programs. And I just feel that the confidence in the industry is great. And the people, you know, those producers, our seedstock producers out there that use certain competitions, certain shows to promote their animals, where we are framed in the calendar of the year in August at Brisbane at the Ecker is prime. So a lot of producers and seedstock exhibitors come down to promote their cattle just before the spring bull sale. So we see a lot of very, very expensive bulls. We don't know that at the time, but when you follow the sales through after the Ecker, there are teams of bulls that worth into the millions, hundreds of thousands into the millions that visit the Ecker each year.
Yeah, just ask you quickly about bull sales. They seem to be getting bigger and bigger year after year, and the key there, I think, is not just the record prices for the best bull usually, but the clearance rates are just phenomenal.
And look, I think we've had our share of on-property sales and multi-vendor sales over time, and the strategy for us was always not necessarily the highest price bull that's good to get. It gives you a bit of a thrill, but certainly the average, and more importantly, I think the clearance to get those bulls sold was always one of the ambitions and goals that we had in selling our bulls. And I know that that is definitely been last year, and we'll see it again this year. Clearances will be high because of the shortage of good livestock out there. And the other thing is that in dry times, people hang on. They try to save dollars a little bit, and they'll get a bull that might be 6-7 year old and still doing a fair job. They'll hang on rather than go and purchase a new one. So those times have gone. There's a lot of confidence out there. A lot of money rolling in commercially, so that there are big dollars being spent on good bulls.
And is it still a necessity, Gary, for the breeders, etc., to physically show their best cattle at the Brisbane exhibition?
I don't think it's a necessity, Kerry. We've seen generations come and go, and there are third and fourth generations of people showing cattle now in some breeds. And when you think, oh, we're getting to the end of an era, the end of an age, there are a whole heap of new people that come in. What we have seen, I think, over time, and, Angus Adnam and myself talk about this regularly, what do we have to do to keep the show, the beef cattle stud show at Brisbane going? And we thought about 4 years ago, with some families dropping out and some big fitters dropping out, that this might change, but we continually see new people coming in. We have seen now more people sending fewer cattle and sending them with fitters. So fitters are people that actually feed and prepare the cattle for shows in particular. So instead of some operations sending probably 10 or 15 bulls of their own, they'll pick out five, send them to a fitter, not have to physically do the work themselves, turn up at the show and watch them being shown. They still have that shop window available to those people that visit.
Now, a competition that was largely unaffected by COVID, I'm just guessing here, but I would think just of the very nature of it, Paddock to Pallet, once again a wonderful success, and weight gains are attracted a bit of eyebrow raising?
Definitely, and continually does not cease to amaze any of the committee. The weight gain part of it, We are now in a position where all of the competition, except for the Wagyu, actually fed at Beef City. And Beef City is unique. It's a place where there is a feedlot. They grow a lot of their own feed. The cattle are walked then up to the processing plant. There is no stress, and the weight gains are phenomenal. So we've got a few guys out there keeping a very good eye on, and they, feedlotters always do, but the cattle this year in particular were eating about 2 kilograms more, but their gain on average to the rest of the feedlot was around about 0.3, 0.4 kilos more per day. So while they eat more, I suppose you have to eat more to gain more. That's quite logical. We were seeing some phenomenal gains out there this year.
There's also, of course, over the period, there's been big changes in the type of cattle appearing at shows. I'm talking about the cattle 30 or 40 years ago, where they used to be what they called a belt buckle high, but now you get some monsters. Is this going to continue, or have we reached a stage where this is where we want to be?
Once again, I think there are countries that follow fads, and Australia falls on the back of some of those sometimes. And if I wanted to point the finger, the US has been a leader in that department. And in my opinion, they tend to go to extremes sometimes. So we grew up in a period, Charolais cattle come into the, we Charolais breeders, Charolais come with first European breed to come into the country. We had a lot of difficulty with calving, just the extra muscle and size of some of the cattle that came in. Now, we were able to adapt those cattle, and I think most people do it across time. Just soon after that happened in the 80s and late 80s into the 90s, we saw what we call in the industry the frame race. So normal average cattle herds these days are frame score 5, frame score 6. Now, frame score is not talked about much anymore, but it's still a handy gauge or rule in just getting a grapple on how big and how small cattle need to be. In the scheme of things there, that frame race went on. We're talking fours through to sixes in cow herds now. And before that, as you said, there would have been fours and threes. In those terms, they went to 11s, some 12s I've seen at Brisbane show in certain breeds. The Kianinas, for instance, were probably a little above that, which are just phenomenal. When you get to that stage, fertility, everything drops off. If you have a hard time, we were caught up in that a little bit. Back in those days, we bought a property that was a little further west than where we were, more breeder country than fattening country. And we sent those types of cattle out there, and it was 18 months before we saw the next calf. So, and we just can't realistically as producers do that. Where it's turned up now, and meat eating quality is starting to come into the equation commercially. Seedstock producers need to take a grasp of that. They need to put figures around their selection. I think there's a lot of data out there. And what we're seeing, particularly in the paddock to pallet, it's those crossbred cattle that are doing so well. So European cattle, tropical cattle crossed with something that might have a little bit more British content. It's not all about weight gain in that competition. So there are three phases to it: weight gain, carcass, and then meat eating quality. But those that overall do the best, so they're more moderate framed, they still have the gains, and they come through with a carcass that meets the specification in terms of fat cover and also probably a finer meat. Faster growing cattle will have a coarser grain, early maturing cattle, slower growing cattle will have a fine grain and therefore a better meat eating quality. So it's that methodology, I suppose, that you need to place around a breeding and selection program that compromises on all of those things to get somewhere in the middle of the road, I think is where the industry is now.
Yes, it's a challenge, isn't it? Because cattle are mostly bred for weight grain, but there's more and more emphasis these days on meat quality.
And those two parameters are antagonistic, and that you've summed it up. That's exactly what people grapple with every day that they look at bulls to put into their commercial programs or their stud programs. You've got to have that combination. So you're forgiving one area to try and gain in the other. If you cross that line, then you've got to go back the other way with a particular trait. So it never ends. And I often relate breeding cattle or seed stock in particular to that golf game. You can hit that ball off the tee down the fairway 300 metres sometimes, and you don't often do it many times after that, or I don't anyway. So it just keeps you going. You know you can do it. You don't always do it, but it's that knowing that you can that drives you into going back and keep on doing it, trying to improve the whole time. So the seed stock game is just like that. You know you can breed good bulls, but sometimes the environment or programs don't work. And you know we have brothers and sisters, and we're all different. And that's that game as well. Genetics play a very important part, but they don't always mix the way you like them to mix.
Now, back to showing again.
Yep.
Do you see the way cattle are judged and exhibited changing so much? I mean, why can't we have them all with a barcode and run them through a scanner and work out the best beast that way.
It wouldn't do our job any good. Those shows would disappear pretty quickly, I think.
They would, wouldn't they?
Yes. And so judging is subjective. We try to put a lot of data around that as a show society in terms of getting the cattle scanned, so ribeye areas, rib fat, pH fat or rump fat. We have a weight, we have weight gain, all of those parameters. We don't get to the stage, and we did years ago had breed plan figures that went alongside that. It's a little bit too difficult to try and take that all in and get a group of cattle in a particular breed, particularly if they're over 100 head, judged in a day. So there is a lot of subjectivity to it. I suppose the trick is to get people in the industry with commercial backgrounds and also seed stock backgrounds that know what they're looking for. And if you just were to run a barcode over things, you don't get things like structural soundness and correctness, which to me are hand in hand with fertility. And they're the two traits that you need to have right at the top of your list when you're looking at breeding stock. If you're if you're not getting a calf every year, for whatever reason, and a lot of people, you know, fertility is not just testicle size or nutrition in cows to keep them cycling. It's their walking ability. Bull has a lot of weight. He uses his back legs to mount cows, and structurally, if they're not right, they don't last. And I don't care how many people tell you that sex is good. When it hurts, bulls don't do it, and you don't get cows in calf.
Look, one thing that would happen if you remove the exhibiting of cattle at the shows all over Australia, it would ruin for many people the biggest social event of the year. The ongoing similarity is with sale yards, of course, where it's a social event for many, many people who go there. It's the sales and the showing are just social events for so many people in the industry.
You hit on a very good point. You take that away. We'll see that in Brisbane this year. There'll be people from the bush that won't come for a number of reasons, and their decisions they have to make. There are others that will come at all costs just for the social benefits. And we're lucky at the Ecker. We have some of the biggest companies, cattle companies in Australia, sometimes have board meetings around the Ecker days. The social events that go on there, it's not just at the Ecker ground. They're everywhere. Race days. There are a whole host of other things. The city of Brisbane benefits so much for the Ecker being on, and the big portion of that is the cattle community and the rural community that come down from the bush to the city. And it's not just Ecker, it's every show, it's sale yards. You've hit it on a very important point. And when you at the outset, the topic for the discussion today was, what is the future of shows and cattle? I think that social aspect is probably one of the most important things that is missed. We drove a little bit of a campaign around that. I think back 3 years ago in 18, the Premier of Queensland released a drought fund at about the same time as Ecker. The respect we got from the city was phenomenal that year. I saw it and had with exhibitors. Tears in their eyes, young kids coming up with $20 in their hand, giving it to our exhibitors, cattle exhibitors, saying, could you please use this? I'm not going on a ride today, but could you please use this to buy some feed for your cows? It's a
wonderful cash. Story. Wonderful story.
Yeah.
Gary, look, thanks for your precious time today. Good luck with the rest of your work at the RNA, and my shout when I catch up with you at the Ecker this year.
Look forward to it, Gary.
That was Gary Noller, councillor in charge of the beef sector at the now cancelled Brisbane show. A reminder, this program was recorded just prior to that cancellation. Coming up, Rob Cinnamon from Yulgabar Pastoral Company. He's one of the most successful exhibitors ever at the Ecker.
Acatac Duo Star from Elanco provides knockdown and residual control of cattle ticks and ivermectin-sensitive parasites. Applied early in the season, Acatac Duo Star reduces the buildup of the tick population and helps to prolong the life of effective chemistry. Give ticks and worms the flick with Acatac Duo Star. Always read and follow the label directions and ensure good agricultural practice for optimal parasite control.
Welcome back. Kerry Lonigan here on The Grill, and our next guest is Rob Cinnamon. Officially, he's the outgoing manager of Yorgama Santa Gertrude Stud in northern New South Wales, a position he's held since, about 20 years or so now. He's known far and wide as an all-round good bloke and one of the most successful exhibitors at the Ecker for many, many years. Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Gary. It's great to join you.
Just how many ribbons and cups have you won over the years?
Oh, goodness, I haven't kept count of that, Kerry, but it's been a great benchmarking exercise for us over time, and it's always great to be in the winner's circle, or certainly understand how your cattle compare to everyone else's. So it's been a very worthwhile exercise from my standpoint.
Well, it's obviously a time consuming and I would say not an inexpensive procedure. Why do you do it?
Look, as I just alluded to, showcasing our cattle, it's a two-pronged effect. It gives us an opportunity to benchmark our genetics, to understand how they compare to everyone on the east coast of Australia, particularly of all breeds, and it's a way of aligning our commercial program with the requirements of the industry. And secondly, it's a great advertising tool to promote our seed stock, our genetics when it comes to selling our annual bull sale.
So, in a cost benefit analysis, all that time and money and input, it's worth it.
You have to have the passion. There's no doubt about that. It's a big commitment, and it's probably something why you see family operations do it so very well over time is that there is a huge commitment and time there. But my involvement with the Ecker goes back to 1973, I think, was my first show with my family's Raven Lee, Santa Gertrude Stud in the early days, through to now with Yugelbar. So it's been a huge part of my life, enjoying and selecting and showing and promoting the best genetics we can produce.
Now, you've been looking at cattle for a long, long time, evaluating them in every respect. What specific do you look for which might attract the attention of would-be buyers to your bulls?
Look, I guess it's about, producing cattle that are industry-focused and commercially relevant for us to ensure that our genetics are going to stand the test of time. We'd like to think that we've produced a herd of cattle here that are relevant and are industry leading in terms of performance, and so we really do focus on the performance of those cattle from a commercial standpoint, and then we aim to secure the best genetics that we can find globally to do so.
Just while you mentioned that, in judging, Rob, should breed plans and past performance figures be taken into account when cattle are being judged?
Okay, I guess my comment there is, I guess single trait selection on any from any trait is dangerous, but utilising all tools that are available to you is certainly useful. Personally, phenotypically, I'll probably often prefer to look at cattle from a visual standpoint, and then look at the data provided in terms of breed plan and raw data and genomic selection and all the other tools that we have available to us in the industry today. But they're all ways of assessing and I guess confirming a judgment that you think may be right.
Yes, I've been told by many, many people, in fact, that you have what is called a good eye for cattle. What does a good eye mean in this respect?
Well, I feel privileged to be honoured that way, but certainly I like to assess cattle quickly, and I guess having the privilege of being custodians of a reasonable size herd of cattle here at Yugelbar this past 20 years has meant that we have to assess cattle quickly when we're drafting cattle on a daily basis, and but I certainly look for those cattle that I believe have that structural correctness. If you don't have a sound basis to begin with, it's very difficult to to build off. Certainly you need that correctness in their feet and legs, that reproductive soundness and then the performance and the commercial performance to go with that. So those things always play very heavily in my mind when I'm looking at animals.
I'm told also that you bought a bull in the very, very early days of your stud, and it turned out to be an outstanding buy, one of the best bull in the history of the breed. What did you see in that particular bull?
Look, I guess it was back in the era of, I suppose, what weighed heavily in my mind in the mid-2000s was we were looking at, I guess, the sheep industry, particularly with mulesing and the issues with animal welfare, and my concern, and I guess my commitment from those days was to produce a line of the very best poll cattle that we could possibly produce in the Santa Gertrude breed. So I was looking for an animal that was outstanding in terms of phenotype, homozygous poll, and an animal that was able to put a stamp on our breeding program. And we purchased that bull for an Australian record in 2007, and through to today, his influence has been remarkable and profound.
Was that bull ever exhibited at a show?
Yes, he was. I think he was shown twice at a Santa Gertrude's feature show for junior champion bull, and he was reserve champion at the Brisbane Royal. So Wirenda Sahara was his name, and certainly a bull that I believe has had a massive influence on the breeding program here at Yugalba.
And the price was $80,000, which I think then was an Australian record.
Yes, it was, and that held for many years. Certainly we're seeing new levels, new numbers in recent times. We paid another Australian record last year for $110,000 that was then broken a week later by another bull. So we're in new times in terms of value. It's an exciting time to be in the industry when we look at the values now being rewarded to the producer, and we certainly enjoy breeding good cattle, and it's nice to be rewarded for them as well.
Those prices are extraordinary, with records being broken week after week. And also, I think is also important, the clearance rates are way, way up there.
Yeah, to me, clearance has always been number one, and it's nice to have a high price, but 100% clearance with a good average is certainly, I think, most stud masters' aim. Certainly from a longevity perspective, it's important to have that sound financial basis to your business, and clearances of production sales are so very important in that regard.
So when people are buying a bull and you're assessing other bulls, how much influence does the history influence you? I mean, in the sense that the ribbons and cups that particular animal might have won, does that influence you greatly, or just another reference point?
Look, I think it's another reference point. I go back to my point about any single trait selection is dangerous. But the show ring still has a role to play in attracting potential buyers to your breeding program. That's why I continue to enjoy the steer and carcass competitions, because of their commercial relevance. And I believe the average commercial cattleman or woman can relate to a steer and that final product. So I find that a very good way to benchmark, as is for many people continuing to show lead cattle as well. So there are all ways of promoting Australian beef, and good ways for stud masters to promote their product.
Yes, the relatively recent paddock to pallet competition seems to attract a lot of interest these days.
Look, I think its success is that it is commercially relevant and it is industry focused, and I think it's one of the greatest competitions that are out there for not only feedstock producers but the progressive commercial cattlemen and women, because of it enables you to compare your cattle against the best genetics that are available in the country at the present time, and to be able to compare and to see where you perhaps can improve your cattle from time to time, or certainly just keep your program aligned to market trends and requirements is a valuable tool for us all.
There seems to have been some difference emerging in the type of cattle appearing at shows from way back, I'm talking about 30, 40 years ago, where they had what you might call belt buckle cattle. That is, they were smaller cattle, about high enough to reach a belt buckle. And now we're seeing hulking 1,300 kilo bulls and bigger cows appearing in the ring. Moderation seems to be the word now. Do you think the industry has arrived where it wants to be, or are we going to see any more development where the cattle get bigger and bigger?
Look, I think it continues to evolve with the consumer demand, but and historically we've tended to follow the North American trends a little, and they've certainly moderated their cattle over recent times. I think the Australian demand is, or type of animal is, probably will continue to be a little larger than the American animal at this point, but perhaps the days of the extreme 1,300-1,400 kilo bulls and the 1,000 kilo cows aren't necessarily always commercially relevant on a larger pastoral scale. Certainly impressive to look at, but it's again getting that balance of the production traits that suit your operation and the environment that you operate under.
Rob, we're all surrounded by COVID wherever we are, in the city or the bush. What influence has COVID had on your business?
Oh, massive. COVID hit the week before our production sale last year in early September, and it easily had probably a $2,000 to $2,500 negative impact on averages for our sale, given that in the Santa Catrina's business, a large proportion of our clientele is located Queensland and north, and so certainly the ongoing challenges of movement with COVID is something that we're all dealing with. Unfortunately, we're dealing with it again here and now, which I guess is making us all reach out for different ways to expose our cattle to our clients and provide as much information and opportunity for people to see them. So I think it's seen a shift in how we promote our cattle. I guess we're all learning to photograph and video much more extensively and provide more data for those who are unable to travel.
It's the way of the day, isn't it, Rob? I mean, the online facility. Do you see the day when studs will do more and more of your product online?
I think it's here to stay. I think there will always be a preference for, particularly when if in the seed stock market, to physically see those animals that are going to attract a premium or record dollar. But I guess in building client trust with one's breeding program, it's guaranteeing the repeatability of the cattle that you produce. And if you can build that trust and rapport with your client over time, I see the commercial cattlemen utilising it more and more, providing they have that trust in the business that they're dealing with.
But there's nothing like the social intercourse of a sale or an exhibition to cement the relationship between the breeders and the buyers.
Absolutely. Look, people do business with people, and that interaction between breeders and buyers, it's something that I think it's why so many of us enjoy being in agricultural industry, and particularly breeding of seed stock. It's meeting and mingling and swapping ideas with people of like mind, and it's something that certainly from my perspective I really relish and enjoy.
Yeah, thoroughly agree, 100%. Now, Rob, you've had a wonderful career where you are at present, and you're about to embark on a new sort of career. What's in that?
Yeah, look, so we've been honoured and privileged to have had the last 20 years as custodians of Eagle Bar Station for Bayou and Sarah Meyer and their families, and it's been an opportunity that we've relished, and it's been a good 20 years. It doesn't seem like 20 years, but time certainly has flown. Moving forward, we're looking to retain that relationship with Eagle Bar and the Meyer family through in an advisory capacity, where we'll continue to help steer the direction of the genetic and sales and marketing program here, but enabling Lorraine and myself to explore other opportunities in agricultural as well, to further grow our own personal cattle business, and hopefully I really enjoy sitting on agricultural boards. Currently I'm a director of the Casino Food Co-op, something I certainly enjoy. I'm a councillor of the Santa Catrudis Association, and previously I've sat on the council of the RAS Sydney Royal Show. So I'm interested in further board positions that are related to agriculture, and this next chapter in our lives certainly hopefully will allow us to explore those opportunities further.
Rob, you've had a wonderful, wonderful career so far. Long may it continue. I hope we can catch up for a sherbet or two at the Ecker.
Looking forward to it, Kerry, and here's hoping.
A reminder, this podcast was recorded just prior to the RNA's cancellation of the Ecker. I'll be back next week with another podcast episode highlighting the big hitters and some of the characters of Australia's beef industry. I'm Kerry Lonergan. This podcast is presented by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health. Goodbye until next week.